Interview number 5, side 2. Saul, can you tell us how the Anniston House and Jewish Community Center merger came about?
Yes. Although I hope my memory for names holds up on this one. I think, begin though with a very brief statement on the background. As follows, and that is that way back in, and it is way back, in the early 50s, the National Council of Jewish Women opened up in Squirrel Hill a small lounge, as it was called, for, they always used the term, I guess, senior citizens. They had been the first in the country, it was certainly the first in Pittsburgh. And it was done, as I said, by the Council of Jewish Women, which, of course, was not a professionally operated organization as distinct from Jewish Community Center, which took very seriously its professionalism, rightly or wrongly. The Council Lounge proved to be successful very quickly, and eventually, I shouldn't say eventually, and not too long thereafter, the Jewish Community Relations Council, the Jewish Community Center initiated a similar program of recreational activities for the elderly. That recreational program, from the beginning, was in direct competition, obviously, with what the council was doing. And from the very beginning, the two programs, and therefore the two organizations, were in direct and harsh conflict. This conflict became very deep when the Council of Jewish Women managed to obtain an open Anniston House. That's a separate story, which I'm sure the Council of Jewish Women has lots of oral history on, but it was primarily, of course, the result of the efforts of Dorothy Blumenthal, who really was extraordinarily strong and effective in accomplishing that, particularly against the bitter opposition of the neighbors. Always marveled at, really, that Dorothy fought that through, because the neighbors were bitter about it. Anyway, Anniston House, of course, was opened up and became the jewel, so to speak, in the Council of Jewish Women's activities. In the meantime, sponsored a lot of activities for the elderly, which, as I say, were in direct conflict with the Council. And years went by, and the two were duplicating each other's efforts, and everybody deplored it, and periodically efforts were made, either conversationally or to some extent through studies, whatever it might be, to correct it, to bring about either a merger or amelioration, whatever it be, but to no avail. Finally, and I don't remember with whom I initiated the discussion. Probably was Dorothy. I'm sure about that. Whether it was Dorothy or whether it was someone and then Dorothy. Anyway, somewhere along the line, I talked about, maybe I'll just skip the names. I talked to the Council of Jewish Women and to the Jewish Community Center about the possibility of some sort of study which would take a look at what the two organizations were doing. I remember being very careful about how I approached it. It was very clear that the object of the study was to bring about merger of the particular programs, not of the two organizations, but of these particular programs. The trick was to somehow or other develop a process which would, in a sense, sidestep the hostilities, force the parties to look objectively, so to speak, at hard data and see if the conclusion of merger could be made, in a sense, self-evident. The way I phrased it, I think, makes it sound hard. And it was hard, in a way, and yet it was very easy, in a way. I remember getting together at a meeting of the two groups, I guess, representatives of the two groups, at the Latterman House. And Errol Latterman, who may have already been president, or who, no, I guess he was not yet president, said to me that you'll never get this, you'll never work this out. No one can do it. And I said, well, we'll see. And we then set up, at my proposal, the following study. We took accounts, this is true, we took accounts of every individual who entered Anathan House, or who entered the Jewish Community Center to use a senior citizen program. So we identified what program he or she was going to use, and how often they used it and so forth. We kept a complete count. And I think if I remember right, we got their names and so forth. When we were through, we compared, we compiled the data, obviously, and then we compared it and looked at the individuals and so forth, and it became clear, I sometimes marvel at why it became so clear, but it seemed to become clear to all of us that if we could bring about a merger, and that there would be a lot more use of programming than there was up to this point. In a sense, what happened was that both the Jewish Community Center and Anathan House discovered, as they looked at this objective data obtained over a 2 or 3, whatever it was, week period, or maybe even 4 week period, as these two organizations looked at that data, they discovered that their programs and their facilities were not being used to the extent that they had believed. Both of them had kept insisting that they were being pushed very hard, and that the great use was being made. All of a sudden, they discovered this wasn't true. At least they acted like they accepted that. I certainly did my best to persuade them that that was true. And they then agreed that there ought to be some rapprochement, some coming together. And finally, a merger took place of the programming, and a new committee was set up. It was very, very difficult because the council did have an employee at that point, Jackie Younger, and somehow or other it became important that she be folded into the Jewish Community Center staff so that she would have the benefits, pensions and things like that arrangements, which she did not have under the council. On the other hand, the question is to whom was she going to be responsible, and she finally was made responsible to a professional within the Jewish Community Center, and that professional term was supposed to staff a joint committee and so forth. And for years, it really didn't work well, in my opinion. I don't know if there's too much point in going into details to why it didn't work well, but it did have to do certainly with the way people handle themselves, and certainly lack of professional insights, I think, in certain ways, and certainly suspicion and irritation towards the professional, sometimes justified, sometimes not, on the part of the council. But, and by the way, I should interject here that if this acceptance of merger was not a quick and ready acceptance on the part of council, some of the old line, if I may use the word, leadership of the Council of Jewish Women resisted the merger and voted against it. But Dorothy pushed for it, and some others joined her, and therefore it did go through. But it was not immediately successful, in my opinion, by a long shot. And many years went by when I was very unhappy with what I thought should have been a much more effective program, and where I thought, frankly, that the center personnel was not using the kinds of insights and so forth that were necessary to effectively take advantage of what the council had to offer. But in recent years, for certain kinds of reasons, I think the situation has changed. I think the committee is now functioning more effectively. I believe that, by the way, the initial agreement called for services to be provided only to the elderly in Squirrel Hill, and stayed this way for a long time, although I, for quite a few years, wanted it to be extended, and I wanted this committee, which I felt really should basically be not dominated by exactly, but be very much a part of the council programming. I wanted that committee, that joint committee, to be responsible for programming for the elderly throughout the entire Federation area, and I believe that is now a factor. Other things have happened, of course, too, that have, I think, probably made the committee more effective. And one of the factors certainly has been the council's initiative and success in operation of the daycare center at the home, which, as a byproduct, has led to more cooperation among all the professionals and the Council of Jewish Women and so forth. But it is true that the bitterness and the hostility between the Council of Jewish Women on the one hand and the Jewish Community Center on the other hand is perhaps not comparable to the bitterness that I described earlier in connection with, say, the Chronicle and so forth. Nevertheless, that bitterness between Council and the Jewish Community Center was deep, long-standing, abrasive, and did not seem susceptible to softening or to dissolution. I may be fancy. The merger did, in the long run, no work. One of the things I learned is that bringing together disparate groups with a history of hostility and inability to work together, that bringing together does not quickly and automatically dissolve the differences and the angers. It sometimes takes years. As a matter of fact, during my tenure, of course, the merger of the Jewish Community Center, well, it wasn't Jewish Community Center, the Irene Kaufman Settlement and the YMWHA took place. And I guess that was about as bitter as any of them, with the possible exception of the Chronicle, which was really a matter of personality. But it took years to bring about the merger between the Y and the Irene Kaufman Settlement. And I can remember, reminiscent, I sometimes think of Harry Kamen and I. I can remember Bob Hiller and Hyman Rogal getting together for hours on end. Hyman was a talker, getting together for hours on end, talking about the merger and so forth. And yet, as far as I know, Hyman, in the long run, was very constructive in terms of bringing about the merger. But there are people to this day who are still resentful, and I can name them, still resentful about the fact that the Jewish Community Center and the Y came together, and that there's no longer an independent Y, and of course now no longer even a Y building. And people who have never forgiven the organized Jewish community, so to speak, or more specifically, I guess, the Federation, for bringing about that particular merger, although Lord knows that was in the cards, essential, and in the long run, I think beneficial, considering the scope and resources of our Jewish community. But I also learned not to leap to the conclusion that merger in and of itself solve problems, even though as part of the Federation apparatus, professional apparatus, I found myself again and again pushing towards merger, because the Federation carries within itself, so to speak, a natural impetus towards merger and consolidation, because the latter, that is consolidation, presumably leads to efficiency and also effectiveness, although most people use the term efficiency, and Federation is dedicated to efficiency, for better or for worse.
In the merger of these organizations, in the merger of the organizations, do they both share expenses of the paid worker or workers?
At the council?
Yes.
Yes, there was arrangements for the council. And the big issue was who was going to be responsible to whom. What really happened was this. For many years, what really happened was that the councilwomen, Dorothy, although I think she was very good about it, Helen Spahr, very, very active. Well, doesn't make any difference who they were, others as well, found it very difficult to limit. And I'm not saying they should, by the way. It should have. In fact, I think there should have been a way to take advantage of their energies and their commitment. They found it very difficult to limit in any way their sense of control and responsibility for programming. And yet there was this joint committee staffed by a paid professional. And the paid professional saw herself as being responsible. And there are ways of staffing a group of lay people who take themselves seriously as being in control. Sometimes it's true, there is a bitter conflict between professional and lay people. Sometimes the professional should say, I can't do it this way, and then you either have to begin to give me some leeway or this or that or whatever it is, or I'll have to cease working with you. But I did not think there was enough, as I said much earlier, insight into and flexibility on the part of the Jewish Community Center in its dealings with the council lay women, who had this long history of successful, from their standpoint, of successful working with the elderly. There was another issue also, which is an interesting one, a philosophical one. The Jewish Community Center insisted that their technique, their style, their philosophy of service to the elderly called for the elderly to be, to be stimulated and not to be served. They saw the council as treating the elderly, not as patients perhaps, but at least as not stimulating them to be independent enough and so forth. The center, at least, felt that there was a difference in philosophy, and I think probably rightly so to some extent. And I think this did have a lot to do with the problems that existed between the two organizations. But as I say, the years go by, and some of the people who are crucial to the difficulties finally pass out of the picture, or if they don't pass out of the picture, become less responsible, or finally, as happened frankly at the Home for the Aged, become confronted with the fact that their way is no longer the right way, and they have to change.
Saul, can you tell us about the relationship of Montefiore Hospital and the United Jewish Federation?
I'll talk a little bit about that, although I don't really feel that I can be too useful there. My direct involvement, although, well, let me phrase it differently. There's been, of course, a close relationship between the Federation and the Montefiore Hospital all the way back to the creation of the Federation of Jewish Philanthropy. Has been close. The relationship has been a close one, particularly because officers and leaders in the Federation have also been officers and leaders at the Montefiore Hospital on many occasions. Not always, but on many occasions. In the many, many years ago, there were some very significant problems having to do with funding and financing of the Montefiore loans and so forth, which I won't get into. There was a very interesting business between the Montefiore and the Federation way back in 1960, which I'll mention because I'm sure today in the area, except for Fulberg, I guess, would remember it. The Montefiore, way back in about 1960, undertook a major study of its future, having to do with lots of questions about the scope of its service, the kind of its service, and I think even its relationship to the university, although I don't think, yes, and even to having to do with the relationship to the university. And they actually brought in an outside consultant named York, who made a very elaborate report called the Rourke Report and issued a series of recommendations and so forth, calling for an expansion program and so forth. It was in those years, by the way, that the Montefiore committed itself to becoming a teaching hospital fully affiliated with the university. There were people even then who questioned it, by the way, what the result of that would be. But whatever the reasons were, and whoever did it, the die was cast many, many years ago in that issue. The Rourke Report, as I say, called for an expansion, and the Montefiore decided that it wanted to expand, I think at that time, to a 300-bed hospital. Maybe it was already 300. Anyway, the expansion was going to be towards eventually 500 beds. The expansion and then capital construction, some fundraising, although not too much, and so forth. The Montefiore was a beneficiary of the Federation, and it was understood that it would have to get Federation approval. And Federation at that time, I'm not so sure it would be true today, at that time took very seriously its role as the reviewer or evaluator of the Montefiore's proposal to expand. Both in terms of whether Montefiore could find the capital resources and what the operating implications were. And up until almost the date of the presentation by the Montefiore to the Federation Board, the issue hung in the balance. It really did, as to whether Montefiore would receive Federation approval. And finally, someone, I guess it was Goldberg, although it might have been Joe Katz, but I think it was Irv. Anyway, someone came up with a proposal that within the architectural plans that had already been developed, it could be possible to convert what had been originally proposed to be single bed rooms into semi-private rooms. And that if this proposal were carried out, a certain number, I don't remember now, obviously, a certain number of additional beds would be added to the Montefiore complement, and this in turn would increase substantially Montefiore's operating income based upon a proposed percentage of occupancy. And this in turn meant a balanced projected operating budget. And the Montefiore came in and made this report to the Federation Social Planning and Budgeting Committee, and the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee accepted it. As a matter of fact, I remember very well writing on short on a very short time to writing a rather lengthy, in this instance, report for the Social Planning and Budgeting Committee to the Federation Board, recommending approval of the Federation, recommending approval of the Montefiore proposal. And the Montefiore then went ahead on its expansion program. In later years, of course, there were two, I don't know whether I should say two, there were several issues that were not exactly Federation Montefiore issues. Some people thought they ought to be, as Sylvia has indicated at one point. Certain people thought there should be. One issue had to do with the question of the relationship between the full-time staff, and particularly the chief of the full-time staff on the one hand, and the attending staff on the other, and the rules and regulations governing the attending staff, and the responsibilities and powers of the chief of staff, full-time chief of staff. This was an extraordinarily bitter business, perhaps more bitter than the Chronicle. I can't think of anything that was more bitter. It extended for many years. It resulted, as a matter of fact, in a very substantial number of the attending staff eventually leaving the Montefiore Hospital and becoming affiliated with other hospitals. This was taking place at a time when Jewish doctors were beginning to be accepted by other hospitals, and in addition, at a time when other hospitals were beginning to grow in suburbs and so forth. So it was not impossible any longer for Jewish doctors to leave Montefiore. And I don't know if there's any real point in attempting to review that. I was frankly never part of any decision making, as I don't think anybody in Federation, in a sense, really was, although there were all sorts of private discussions that went on. But insofar as official consideration by Federation of that particular issue, the relationship between full-time staff or chief of staff and attending physicians at work, I really don't recall that issue ever having been put officially on the agenda of the Federation Board or Social Planning and Budgeting Committee. Although the amount of discussion that went on between people who, as I said, were leaders in Federation and leaders in the Montefiore together, the amount of discussion that took place between all the parties, the doctors and the Federation leadership and so forth, the amount of informal discussion was incalculable. Breakfast, so forth and so forth. The other issue, which can be talked about if you want a little bit, had to do, of course, with the relationship between Federation, between the Montefiore on the one hand and the university on the other. Wasn't there a question of bitterness, although there was lots of bitterness between Federation on the one hand, true?
No, you
had Federation on the one hand and some university people on the other hand, but it really had to do with the question of whether the Montefiore's ability to survive as a hospital and as a Jewish-sponsored hospital was threatened. And that was an issue in which, on a couple of occasions at least, Federation did officially become involved. Whatever the reasons were, and I there had some question as to the wisdom of Federation leadership, whatever the reasons were, the Montefiore particularly, and the Federation to a lesser extent, didn't really want to be in the forefront of negotiations between Montefiore on the one hand and the university on the other hand. However, on those occasions when Montefiore felt seriously threatened, Federation was willing to intervene and did intervene, even to the extent, at least on one occasion, I think maybe on more than one occasion, the extent of writing formal notifications to the university of Federation's concern about what was happening and Federation's desire that there be an understanding on the part of the university of Montefiore's position and so forth. I can remember one meeting where that issue was discussed.
We're almost at the end again, Saul, and we hate to cut you off in the middle of a sentence. Well, maybe we should say this. It's 4:57.